at the crop. Welcome to the 87th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded on the first Monday evening in October after a certain visit to White Hart Lane. We're not going to mention that this time, oh no. But thanks to our sponsors, GoonerShirts.com, the website for all your coolest Arsenal t-shirts. What's your favourite Gooner Shirts t-shirt, Basti?
I've been barred from saying it.
But they're all great though, aren't they?
They're all great, but it's red and it's got a certain old-fashioned crest on the front.
Thanks for nothing. Anyway, I'm your host, Mark Collington, and still with me on the panel from my previous recordings are Steve Ashford, Don Sebastiano, Mike Francis, and may have a panel of four, Joe Bulford's here as well. It's the entire crew. Right, now this time around's a little bit different. We're going to cast our minds back and look at times gone by in a nostalgia special. So this is going to be brilliant. So we're going to look back on 15 years of Arsene Wenger. And let's remember the first 10 years, the best years, that culminated with the move from Highbury. So let's start with you, Mike. What were your first impressions when the appointment of Mr. Wenger was announced?
I thought we had to be positive.
We can start off.
Come on, we all went, who? I don't think there was, and actually, just as an aside, this is what annoys me about people that sort of say, who would you get now if Wenger had left? It's like, well, who did we get when Rioch left? No one, Arsene Wenger's name wasn't first on the lips, was it? But he turned out to be a fantastic appointment, and credit Dean for that, I suppose. It was his appointment, really. But yeah, you did wonder when he came in, and those first few weeks, it was all very different and very strange. But he was fortunate, wasn't he? Because he brought in Vieira, and before Wenger had even got his feet under the desk, Vieira had already made an impression, and boy, did that help him. So that was a great first memory.
It was. So, Joe, cast your mind back 15 years ago. Can you remember the day when Wenger was announced as our manager?
I can remember it quite distinctly.
Was your hair the same length?
Probably. A little bit longer, actually. And I was in Hong Kong.
But you had a beard at all?
I didn't have a beard. I never went for a goatee, but we're getting sort of... Yeah. We're kind of going away from...
But you were in Hong Kong, were you?
I was in Hong Kong, and I was watching the situation develop. And I was kind of disappointed about Bruce Rioch's demise, although I heard there was a lot of dressing room unrest and so on. So I thought, well, okay, let's get a good new manager. I was thinking somebody like Johan Cruyff, but no, we've got this guy that I've never heard of. Even though I was in Asia, I didn't know anything about Arsene Wenger. He was a manager of Grampusay and whatever. They were not called Nagoya Grampus at that time, it was Grampusay. And he's come in as from the J League, and the J League was a nothing league at that time, and it probably still is, unfortunately. And as much as I'm going to get a lot of stick for saying that, but it's not really the best grounding to go from the Japanese football league to the English football league top division. It's not the best grounding, is it? So I wasn't really enamoured with that particular. Bit of business by the club, bringing in this manager that hadn't really done it. He'd been at Monaco before. So what? I thought, what? What does that give him? Okay, David Dean. I've got a lot of confidence in David Dean. David Dean said he was going to be a great manager, and so it turned out to be. So you know, David Dean comes up trumps because of that.
Basti, do you remember those halcyon days?
I do. I was still leaping for joy that we purchased Dennis Bergkamp and Platy, and well, mainly Dennis
before,
Bergkamp.
Yeah. Under Rioch, though, wasn't it?
That was under Rioch, yeah. And I don't seem to remember it being that dreadful. It wasn't as bad as it is now, was it? I mean, Rioch.
Fifth in this season.
Yeah, I mean, the Rioch era wasn't that. I seem to remember it as quite a sort of flowery, happy time with Dennis Bergkamp and
David Platt,
Ian Wright.
There was a famous back four.
In fact, it was. Compared to today, I'll take it. But Wenger, I didn't have a clue who he was, and then all these Tottenham fans started putting dodgy kind of, rumours about him.
Assumptions about him.
I assume it was Tottenham fans, and they're still singing it now. But that's just because he had thick glasses and an anorak and was vaguely intelligent.
Like a good self, Basti.
Well, I don't have an anorak or thick glasses, and I'm not vaguely intelligent.
That's not from where I'm sitting.
Steve, when Wenger, obviously you're a bit anti-Wenger now, but obviously the guy went on first of all to have some great years.
Yeah.
What was your first impressions of the man?
Yeah, I've only been anti-Wenger since it's all gone tits up, and I've given him year after year after year to put it right, and he hasn't done. But when he first came, I thought it was a great appointment. only because I had ultimate faith in David Dean, and I still have. I love David Dean. I think the only time that we've ever really been a spending club and a competitor, it was when David Dean was at the club. So anything David Dean did, as far as I was concerned, was fine. And if Dean thought Wenger was the man for the job, that was fine by me.
Well, also, Arsenal's a club that has always said, given people benefit of the doubt. Like when Bergkamp joined, remember, it was a good few months before he started playing well, but everyone knew he was class, so we'll give people a chance. You know, Wenger came, we gave him a chance, he won the double, so it wasn't a no-brainer as to where we would go from there. And then, actually, he did pretty well for a while until something went wrong.
Within 3 or 4 weeks of him arriving, the way we played changed. We became a lot more attacking. We suddenly looked like a vibrant, brilliant football team. And for a time, we were going for the title that year. We blew up at the end, but the following year, awesome.
And we won the double. Yeah. And let's go back to that mythical double, the 97-98 season, and those many happy memories under the Highbury sunshine. Let's start with you, Joe. What are your memories of that marvellous season? Anything that stands out particularly for you?
My dad ruined it. He stopped me seeing the final game of the season.
Edmonton.
Adams scored that volley. Oh. I missed it.
Why did you miss it, Joe?
Yeah, because my dad said, no, you don't want to watch that game. I do actually, Dad. And he took me away from it all. And he said, no, look, you've got to take the kids out somewhere.
Still speaking to?
Kind of.
My dad missed that game as well. He was a season ticket holder at the time. But he would arrange to go on a family viewing holiday down to Devon. And I think that was one of his eternal regrets that he wasn't at that game.
Well, I remember it well because I didn't have a ticket until 20 minutes before the kickoff, and I was desperately going to the little Arsenal clubhouse there and going around to everyone, and there was this woman called Lynn who said, well, if I find one, let me know. Suddenly there was this coach party from Norway or something that hadn't turned up. They were stuck in Dover or Calais and they weren't going to make it. And this bloke was handing out these replica tickets. So I ran up and I said, well, have they all gone? He said, no, yeah, you can have one, 20 quid each or something. I can't remember what it was. So I bought one and I thought, oh God, Lynn. So I ran back, got her one as well. And we came
well
in
done,
replica tickets. No, that, I mean, to be there when Tony Adams, his arms went up and he walked up to the West Stand, and I was just right down at the bottom right side of the North Bank. It was just,
unbelievable.
Adams' left foot volley, come on. But I'll tell you what, though, I was convinced Everton, was it 3-1 up or something?
3-0, was it up?
3-0?
I don't know, I can't remember.
But at one point when we were up, I was still panicking. Something had to go wrong, you know what I mean? Yeah. In off someone's arse, off a corner or something. But when it finished, I remember it was the first time in years I actually ended up upside down. I mean, the old days when you had a surge, you kind of like everyone would rush to the front, you'd end up upside down. And I ended up upside down with my head under a seat and my feet in the air. I don't know how it happened. And Lynn was saying, "You all right?" And I was delirious. It was the best.
Was you there as well, Steve? Yeah.
Oh,
that game?
I've only missed 4 home games in 45 years. So I was definitely there that day. But my abiding memory of that season wasn't that game. It was the home game against West Ham earlier on in the season.
I think it was
the second or third home game in it. It was a night match.
Oh, when Overmars scored a couple, didn't
it? Overmars scored. Petit had a blinder. Vieira had a blinder. The whole team was magnificent that night. Yeah. And that night, I suddenly thought to myself, my God, we're the best team in the country for the first time in years. And we're going to win it. We're going to win the title this year. And from that night on, I was just so happy for the whole season.
But if we remove our rose-tinted spectacles just for a moment, if we remember that was also the first season when November was a nightmare. And we had a shocking November. And we lost at home to Blackburn about 2 weeks before Christmas.
Was it 3-1 or something like that, wasn't it?
We lost 3-1. I think we dropped down to about fifth or sixth place. And there was people outside the ground. They weren't happy. And Wrighty was outside the dressing room, there was all sorts of trouble. But it was after that game, supposedly, so the myth goes, that the fabled back four sat Vieira and Petit down and said, "You're not doing what you're meant to do. You're meant to protect us. You're meant to sit in front of that back four and protect us." And from there, and we then went on that 10-game unbeaten run up until culminating in the Everton game. And we were the best team by far.
Did we win 17 out of 18 games or something after that?
No, I don't think.
I know we won a 10 game unbeaten run.
It's 10 straight wins.
Yeah, and then we lost the last two,
including 1-0 FA Cup at Old Trafford with Overmars scoring.
But we mentioned the FA Cup there. I mean, back in those days, it was a good prize to win, and it was a steam competition still. Anybody there for the game against Newcastle at the old Wembley Stadium?
I was there.
Overmars deflected goal, nicked over the head of the keeper. Fantastic. Shearer hitting the post.
Anelka offside, wasn't Anelka offside?
Don't know, don't care.
Just place took
it. Yeah, and oh god, the final, sunny day, marvellous, fantastic.
You know who I was sitting next to, name drop.
Go on,
I was sitting next to Gabby Yorath. who was then known as Gabby Yorath, what's she called now? Gabby Logan.
Logan, yeah.
And I was sitting next to her and she's a Geordie fan.
She was nice
fan.
Back in those days. Yeah,
well, she was a Geordie fan. I was like over the moon getting all excited and she was like, yeah, alright, and sort of but yeah, I managed to weasel a nice ticket.
Did you try it on with her?
No.
Because wasn't that back in the days when you used to do the sex with quite a lot of celebrity football fans?
Well, I'd done this thing with Alistair McGowan. He got the ticket and he was sitting on the other side. So, name drop. Sorry, everyone. It's horrible, isn't it?
Joe, was you able to watch the FA Cup final?
Or
was
yeah,
you
I remember.
Be watching that as
I remember,
well?
I remember driving past a magpie on the way.
On the Jesus way to Christ, random.
Because I didn't, yeah, well, I just assumed it was an omen of some sort and I weren't quite sure what to make of it. So I asked my trusty dad who made me miss, you know, the ultimate game in the league. I said, what does that mean if I drive past a magpie? He said, that's good luck. So I said, you know, for which team? Because we're playing the Magpies. He went, well, it's good luck for you. So I went, all right, well, Arsenal are going to win. And,
yeah. And by the way, can I just say that if you watch the footage of Tony Adams lifting the cup, right, top right-hand corner, there's me in my Arsenal away kit, 1971 away kit, going mental.
That so is brilliant.
That's an even better claim to fame than anything, really.
That's great to know, and we'll get over to we'll get on to some
bloody proud.
No, Basti, it's brilliant, and we'll get on to some other great achievements of England in a minute. No, obviously that was the season. I think we went out of Europe pretty damn quickly in the UEFA Cup that season. And that often has been the template for Wenger in Europe, especially for his first 10 years. We didn't have so many great runs in Europe, did we really? And so the question is that A, why do we fail to win the Champions League when we had such a fantastic team? And I guess why are Wenger's best teams not done as well as they could have in Europe's premier competition? And I guess let's start with you on there, Steve.
Well, when you look at those games we played at Wembley, I think we played it for about 4 years, didn't we?
A couple years, I think, yeah.
We hardly won a game there. And at that time, we were by far and away the best team in England. I know we didn't win the title every year. United won it a few times, but by and large, we were always up there with them. And it always amazes me to think that that fantastic team always failed spectacularly in Europe. And maybe, just maybe, you know, Wenger, even in those days, wasn't the manager that he was all cracked up to be. And it's only now that those chickens are finally coming home to roost.
Do you think that's the case, Mike? I mean, would you put that down to?
I can see where Steve's coming from. I think tactically we were naive at times. We went a bit gung ho. Some of the players we were coming up against players we just weren't used to. In you know, the likes of Batistuta, it was very different to any sort of player that played in.
There was teams
in
that we played
England at that time.
There was teams that we played in the Champions League in those days when we played at Wembley and also at Highbury that we should have murdered. Deportivo, Fiorentina,
Lens.
We should have murdered those teams. And we lost 1-0 most of the time, or 2-1 or whatever. And even in those days, Adam Velasco, who is now Wenger's archest critic, he used to ring me up from Deportivo in 2001 or whatever and say, do you know what? Wenger's lost it. This team is fucking shit. And do you know what? That was 10 years ago, before we'd even won the Invincibles and all that. And I always think there's been a certain naivety in Wenger as far as tactics are concerned. And if he'd have been a bit more tactically aware in Europe in those days, we would have won a hell of a lot more.
What would you Definitely. Say to that, Basti? I mean, do you think we underachieved in Europe? I mean, obviously, we obviously have to mention the final.
Yeah, well, that was you know, you think about it, you know, if Jens Lehmann had got sent off, which people have blamed the ref, but ultimately Lehmann was Krusty the Clown. He was a bit bit nuts, wasn't he? And I remember. Pires walking off the pitch and just thinking, oh shit, you know, and because Barcelona, they weren't then what they are now, but they were still a very good team. But that Arsenal team was probably the best Arsenal team I've ever seen in my life over that, you know, up up until that era. Mm. And they really, you know, it's heartbreaking because we got that close. And I remember booking into this shitty little hotel. It was like one of those 40 euro a night hotel thing. Looking at the shit room thing, it doesn't matter. I'll wake up on that sodden little pillow tomorrow, either with a massive smile on my face or in tears, right? And I don't need to say what happened, but the fact of the matter is, when it was 1-0 at half time, I remember going and Solid scored, right? And going to the toilet for a slash, and everyone, the buzz was like, yes, you know, we can do this. And still with 15 minutes to go, it was, we can do this. When Henri was through, we can do this. And we fucking could have done it, and we didn't. And
some say...
What happened? You know.
Some say that Wenger's tactical naivety lost us that game. Because Barcelona weren't having a kick until the last 15 minutes.
Mm.
And they're credited with bringing on that Scottish fella, Larsson.
It's close.
They're credited with bringing him on to win that game. But when he came on, we took Fabregas off. And I remember Fabregas pointing to his chest as if to say, me? Why me? Fabregas was running the show. We had 10 men.
Yeah.
Fabregas, Kleb and Freddie were running the show in the middle. They couldn't get a kick. The minute Fabregas went off, yeah, and got replaced by Flamini, who never had a kick.
We gave them the ball.
They started having the ball, started putting us under pressure, and we collapsed. And to this day, I blame Wenger for losing that final, because he took Fabregas off and ruined our plan, you know, our positioning and everything about what we were doing well, he ruined by taking Fabregas off. And I still blame him for that.
Can I ask a question very quickly? Of course you can. Is that the same thing as that happened yesterday? Did Arshavin come on? What was it, 1-1 when Arshavin came
this
on?
This makes this podcast not very
sorry,
a bit too topical.
Mention that, were we?
It's okay. Fine, it's okay. But you know, I'm glad your mind's still active, Batty. That's really great. Joe, what was your take on that kind of Champions League final day? It's a moment people often say defined Arsenal's recent history, in the sense that from that point onwards, you could argue things have gone downhill since then. Henri's often blamed for those two chances in front of goal and didn't score. I mean, how close did we come? Do you still kick yourself every day when you think about that match? Or was it a great achievement to get to the final?
It was a great achievement to get to the final, given the team we had, because Arsene Wenger did pretty well, bearing in mind that, you know, how many people would have backed Arsenal to get to the final of the Champions League that season? I don't think many.
No.
I don't think they were in the top five of the prospects to make it that far, and so, you know, from that point of view, I think Arsene did a fantastic job just getting that team there, and particularly Flamini in the team playing out of position at left back. I mean, ever since then, the problem has arose that he's decided that he can play anyone in any position and make things happen. It doesn't quite work that way. He got away with it with Flamini, because Flamini's that sort of player. He can he can adapt himself. Some of the other players we've got in our squad now, they're not as adaptable as what he had back then. But looking at that team anyway, I just think, in a sense, they overachieved. But at the time, I was thinking, we're going to be coming back here, you know, not to the same stadium, because obviously it changes every year, but I thought, we're going to be in Champions League finals every year. This is a reality. Yeah. That's what I was actually thinking.
Especially since we were promised when we moved to the new stadium.
Mm.
And at the time of that final, we'd left Highbury. Our next home match was going to be at the Emirates. We were promised that by moving to the Emirates, we would be able to compete with the very, very best, and we could only get better.
And had we built on that squad, I mean, there's no reason why we wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
You know, at least in one or two more Champions League finals. But obviously, that's not materialised.
Such is life, AJ.
Such is life.
Only kept Fabregas on.
And before we get a bit more perhaps optimistic, at the time it was rumoured that before Wenger came along that Cruyff, and not Jody, but his father, was going to be our manager. If that rumour was actually true, would he have won more titles? And indeed, would he have won in Europe? Do you think, then, Mr. Wenger? Let's kind of play devil's advocate, or let's kind of pretend life has kind of gone that way. What do you think, Mike?
The what if scenario.
Yeah, what if? Would Johan Cruyff have made Arsenal more successful than Arsene Wenger?
I don't think he could have bettered what Wenger achieved in that era, those first 10 years. I do think he could have matched it. I think Cruyff was an exceptional manager. I mean, he has to take a lot of responsibility for how Barcelona are now, because he got them playing that way right throughout the club. So, yeah, I suppose you can dream and say that could have been us. I'm not sure it could have been in reality, but you like to think that it might have been, I suppose.
And if you chaps want to add to that, would Cruyff have been more successful than Wenger?
Don't really have a great deal of thought about that. We were going to get Bobby Robson, weren't we?
At one point, yeah.
I think that would have been a good manager.
And Terry Venables.
He'd have been an excellent manager, given what he did at Ipswich and Barcelona. I think Bobby Robson would have been maybe not as successful, but would have been a great manager for us. I don't have a great deal of thought about Johan Cruyff, to be honest.
That's fine. I can only ask the questions I'm giving, Steve, but I'm glad you've given me so much time there. Basti, I hope for a bit more for you on that one, and a bit more...
Well,
Do you think Wenger was a good, you know, do you think he, obviously we've won, what, the double, two doubles, unbeatable season, three FA Cups. The guy did well, didn't he?
He did very well. And, you know, I'm glad, I feel privileged to have had a part of my life where my club has been top draw, and I've watched some of the most amazing football I could ever wish to watch in my life. There are people that 99% of football fans, you know, barring say possibly Man United fans or Liverpool fans in the 70s or whatever, will ever get the chance to get. I mean, I remember those, as you mentioned, the Highbury sunshine days of, you know, that. Well, running around, just, you know, parading down the town hall and all that, and just floating on air, and you know, floating on air, that feeling. At least I've had that, I've touched it. And okay, we haven't won the Champions League, and we might have to resign ourselves to the fact that in our lifetimes we will never see Arsenal win the Champions League.
Don't
which is
that.
Quite a painful feeling, because that and that we did get that close. But you know what? It's only football. It's not a matter of life and death. It's a lot more important than that.
Controversial. Right, before we go, we mentioned Wenger's first double winning season. But obviously, after that, he won another double in 2001. There's more FA Cups, the unbeatable season. What for you? And I say it's like he's almost gone. Wenger hasn't gone. We're using him in the past tense here. But in those Highbury Wenger years, what was your abiding best memory of the bits we haven't talked about yet, Steve?
Winning against Leicester at the end of the 2004 season. The final match of the Invincible season. And we went one down. And we're all looking at each other thinking, oh no, not today. This surely not. We're not going to blow the record on the last game. Yeah. When we're going to pick the trophy up and win the title, whether we win or lose. But surely we're not going to blow the unbeaten record, you know, against Leicester on the last bloody day. And thankfully we didn't. Ashley Cole and Patrick Vieira scored. And the celebrations afterwards, again in the sun, the sunshine. It was like 98 all over again, but better, because we've had 4 or 5 years of brilliant success since then. And it was just like a roll-on, continuing bandwagon of success. And that 2004 game against Leicester, the atmosphere that day was just unbelievable. And I think that's probably the highlight of the Wenger years, to be honest.
I think it'd be difficult to disagree. I think, if Steve hadn't got there first, I'd probably said the same. But I'll go for the 2002 one.
Yeah.
I know we've won the league twice at White Hart Lane, and that's fantastic, and we're going to love that until the end of time. But actually, winning at Old Trafford against our main rivals over those years, or over that period, was something else entirely, because they hated it. They absolutely hated it, and Ferguson hated it, and it probably didn't do us any favours in the long term, because they bounced back stronger as a result, because they hated it so much. But that, for me, being there that night, again, I get to go to all the big games. I've always managed to find a ticket somewhere. Thank you to everyone that's given me a ticket.
Due to your esteemed standing amongst our supporters in Richard the Gooner, Mike.
Yeah, it's known lots of people, calling in some favours occasionally. But yeah, being there that night was great.
And as Basti says, if it never happens again, if Arsenal do get out of the Championship, if we do finish fourth from bottom this year, no one can take those memories away from us. We've seen that. We had 10, 12 years of unprecedented, unparalleled, brilliant success.
And let's not take anything away. While we're going down nostalgia, memory, euphoria lane, away from you know, that Anfield moment.
That's not the
George
Graham.
I know this is another.
No, but
we're talking about, you know, Arsenal and the bits that matter.
What about Arsenal? And
that's,
you
know, not on my list.
I know it's not on your list. I don't care. You've also said, I'm going to also breach discipline, because you also said, don't mention the Tony Adams with his arms out moment again. And I will, because that's my favourite moment from those Highbury years.
You're on the door. You're not coming in.
You're controversial, Basti.
I know,
you're just
like going against.
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the Silver Dream Machine himself, Joe Broadfoot, for your final take. Joe, your abiding Highbury Wenger memory.
It has to be Highbury. Highbury,
yeah, in those years, those trophies
those
we won.
Those years,
last days at Highbury, the Highbury sunshine, the Halcyon Wenger first era.
I was at the lane when, in the executive box, when Arsenal won the title there, and with my boss, because my boss decided to bring me along, which is a bit silly, really, and I just had to pretend that I was Tottenham. And some of the people in the box were also Arsenal, and when Arsenal scored, they kind of celebrated, and all these Tottenham guys that thought they're quite tough decided they're gonna try and gate crash our box, and I thought, oh, don't have to worry about that. There's stewards everywhere, Well, the stewards disappeared. So I was standing in front of these guys. I'm going, wait a minute, that guy there you want to hit, which was my boss, because he'd just had his teeth whitened. So he was smiling a lot. And so they'd got the ump with him, even though he's Tottenham through and through. They wanted to beat him up.
So he was smiling because he had a new whitened teeth, not because he was happy
and
about the result.
Also, he'd got a bet on the number of corners in the match. So Arsenal were getting all these corners, and he was jumping up and down every time Arsenal got a corner. Because like, I'm getting near him.
You mix in very strange countries.
I do mix with strange people. Like, it has to be said. Anyway, so in the end, with this result, it was just a dream result because, well, you know, Arsenal didn't win, but they won the title. So Tottenham was
such a horrible place to be, isn't it?
It wasn't the best place to be. And you know what I saw, which not that many people saw because I was hanging around right to the end, was Ashley Cole picked up a dummy trophy and put it in the centre circle. And it was, you know, amongst the few people that were left, it was kicking off quite bad.
Did you cry, Joe, with excitement?
No, I didn't, but I was pretty happy.
Just worried for your health, probably.
Well, I was looking about me, wondering, you know, am I going to make it through this?
Is it me or was Sunny at Highbury?
Always Sunny.
Always Sunny.
Yeah,
I think one brilliant band, I forget what they're called, did a great song called Highbury Sunshine, but that was many years ago. I'm not sure who they quite were. But that's your lot for this evening, I'm afraid. And I hope you enjoyed that kind of look into memory lane, or whatever the expression is, back into the mist of time.
Can I just say, you can still get Highbury Sunshine on iTunes.
Fantastic band. And also the Seminole song, Mr. Burkhan, I'm sure as well.
Yeah, you can get that on iTunes as well.
But the more important thing than that is, we're back in November with another set of these brilliant podcasts. In the meantime, once again, you can email us at goonapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks ever to our sponsors, goonashirts.com, for all your Arsenal t-shirt needs, and they really are superb. I'm your host, Mark Collington. Thank you for letting me host today. It's been a great experience. I'll probably be somebody else next time, but that's life. Thank you very much for listening, and cheerio!
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company.
A phone conversation between London and Denver, Sunday, 28th of August, 2011, 11 p.m.
It's getting worse, Mr. Kroenke. They've lost 8-2 today.
8-2, eh, boy? So a narrow defeat, then?
No, Mr. Kroenke. That's actually quite a big loss in this sport.
Really? The Rams often lose by a hell of a lot more than 6 points, I'll have you know, Ivan. And as for the basketball team, hell, don't go there.
But think of the Rapids, Mr. Kroenke.
Who?
Your Major League Soccer team, the ones that play the Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Isn't soccer that game played by pre-adolescent girls?
And half the world outside the States, Mr. Kroenke.
Ah, that's right. It's what those Glazer boys are getting obsessed about. Heard they're doing quite nicely for themselves these days with that United Chesterman franchise.
Something like that, Mr. Kroenke, but the point is that your team are not.
Which team is that?
Arsenal, Mr. Kroenke, the stadium in London. You visited us there a few times.
Darn it, boy, now I remember. That old French fella who speaks like Peter Sellers. Damn funny movies they were. Used to take the wife to the cinema to catch them when we were just stepping out.
That's Arsene Wenger, Mr. Kroenke, and he's responsible for hundreds of millions of the money you've invested over here.
The crazy frog? How on earth did you let him loose with that money, boy?
Well, that's the way things were done before you took control, Mr. Kroenke. The manager is in charge of transfers and wages. He paid £12 million for a teenager recently.
What kind of morally bankrupt palace of sin are you running over there, boy? I don't want to hear about this kind of thing with anyone employed by one of my organizations.
I'd better rephrase that. He has bought the young footballer to play for your team. The name of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Chamberlain? Wasn't he the dude that bent over backwards for the Germans?
Yes, Mr. Kroenke. Well, probably be doing that in Dortmund very soon, anyway.
Anyway, this French guy who seems to be calling the shots. What do you reckon? Time's up? You're making me think this 8-2 defeat is some kind of bad news over there.
Well, we definitely need a change, Mr. Kroenke. Mr. Wenger isn't going to take us anywhere apart from relegation.
Eh? Never heard of that. What is it?
Oh, don't worry about it. Before that, we'll get rid of him. He's contracted until 2014, so we'll have to pay him about £20 million to get shot of him.
£20 million, huh? That's about $32 million. Well, in that case, give him another couple of years and hope he doesn't screw up completely. And one more thing, Gazidis boy.
Yes, Mr. Cronker?
Don't let him buy any more of these underaged ex-prime ministers. You're in charge of the squad draft now, okay?
Yes, sir. I'll get right onto it.